It's time for Windows Weekly. How did Microsoft screw up the release of 1809? Well, Paul Throt and Mary Jo Foley have their theories. We'll also talk about a new streaming gaming service and some interesting book picks and beer picks. They're all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 590, recorded Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. The news from Leak Wobegon. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Prilock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing mails, candy drops, and social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training from Prilock. Go to Prilock.com/twit and use the promo code Leo to save 30%. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. And by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code TWIT for 20% off. It's time for Windows Weekly. We are ready to... Oh, I can't say rumble because then I'd have to... You
know, we're ready to grumble.
That guy trademarked Let's Get Ready to Rumble and made over $100 million in like the last 30 years on people licensing it.
Yeah.
The only reason I throw that factoid in is so that he can't sue me because this was news coverage.
You've acknowledged it.
Here's the thing. I don't mind him copywriting or whatever, protecting the way he says it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, seriously?
Well, we could call this show Let's Get Ready to Grumble. Do you think he'd sue us over that?
Yeah, probably. Even though it's a parody and protected by U.S. laws.
Ah, there you go. I'm mocking him. Mm-hmm. Well. Paul Thurrott is here from Thurrott.com. He has only had 3 hours sleep. So it's going to be grumbleistic. And Mary Jo Foley from AllAboutMicrosoft.com, the ZDNet blog. Are you feeling well-rested, Mary Jo?
Yeah, I think I had like 8 hours, so nice. I'm ready. To grumble.
How's your gong?
What does that feel like, Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Is that nice?
Yeah.
Tell us. Like that'd be good.
I haven't had 8 hours sleep, according to my sleep sensors, in 15 years, I think.
Oh, I get like one a quarter. This is where I'm at, like 8 hours.
Ugh. And now the sleep scientists are telling us, in the past they always said, oh, don't worry, you can make it up with a big, good, nice 12-hour sleep on the weekend. Now they're saying, no, it doesn't work that way. There's no way.
All you have to hope for is there's an afterlife.
And, it's like borrowing from Vinny down the corner. There's no way to repay your sleep debt.
I'm glad I don't have a Fitbit for this reason. I don't want to really know how much I sleep. I think I sleep 8 hours, but I'm sure I do not.
Perfect, because you know what? I think a lot of it is just what your expectations are. And, you know, if you feel, I think I slept well, then you feel good. I only say this as an intermezzo, a prelude to the break-sclusive.
Yep.
Breaking-sclusives.
A gelato-flavored intermezzo. Intermezzo.
That was our amuse-bouche. And now to the meat of the matter. Windows 10, 1809. We at least we now know, don't we, what's wrong?
Yeah.
When we last gathered, we were singing the praises of new matte black Surfi Beats style headphones with Type C chargers. And yes, 1809 had rolled out.
It's like weather in New England, Leo. All you have to do is wait a few minutes and everything changes.
Wow.
I know.
Then we hear that people's data is being deleted, and Microsoft has... It's funny, because how you phrased this really tells us a lot about the author. Microsoft said, we've paused the rollout. Others said, they've re-yanked it. They've they've canceled it. They've rejected it. They revoked it. They, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. This is probably not the right day for me to do this, but I could go through this John Cable post one line at a time. Mary Jo could grab her gong, and we could have a whole episode because I find this to be the most duplicitous thing I've ever seen. It just is not. It's semi not believable.
John Cable being the Microsoft person who explained what was happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does he say, and why do you? Paul Theriot, find it duplicitous or delicious.
Because he contradicts himself a bunch of times. Okay. You know, there's a tiny number of people that this impacted. Let's give the number.
He said
1/100 of 1%, which is 1 in 10,000.
And yep. Paul and I both said when we saw that number, and we've heard from every single one of them, obviously.
Well, yeah, but I mean, wait a minute. How many people do you think got the... Because you had to be a seeker, right? This didn't yet get pushed out.
Right.
So what do you think? A million? Two million?
Yes and no, right? I mean, I do feel like there's a segment of the population. Granted, these are probably not people like my wife or normal people who occasionally will go into Windows Update and see if there are updates, right? They want to be up to date. They want to make sure the computer's okay.
Yeah.
That would be one way to get this update.
That's how I got it. Right.
I just the whole seeker thing has always bothered me because it really is being deployed. It's there's kind of a shadow word of games going on here we're going to pretend we're not broadly deploying it, but actually, if you click the button, you'll get it. And I never liked that. But the other issue here, and I think Mary Jo put this in the notes, was just that they skipped an entire release milestone to release this thing on an arbitrary date.
Yeah.
They never did a release preview swing. Not that would have changed anything, because Microsoft doesn't pay attention to Windows Insiders anyway, obviously, because people complained about every one of the problems that's ever plagued any of these releases ahead of release. That's been one of the interesting and bad things about this process.
But you know what? I feel like release preview is kind of their safety net, right? Like, that's the people who want to be on the slowest possible ring. It's kind of your last hurrah before you say it's done. And so the fact they skipped that this time and just were like, okay, it's done. It was would they have caught it? Would it have shown up more prevalently?
I don't believe so, to be honest. But actually what you said is very meaningful, because there's another game that Microsoft plays, which I don't think either one of us appreciates, which is that they kind of pretend they don't RTM this thing and they don't really talk about finishing it. And they never kind of come out and say, here it is. This is the one. And here are the dates. And if you are on the insider preview and you want to get off, you have until this date to do it, because we're going to start shipping new builds. And they did everything quicker with this release, right? They kind of slipstreamed it forward and pushed it out to the public. They closed that magic window. Remember, between the time I wrote the tip and the time the show started on that same day last week, they shipped a skip ahead. Well, actually, they skipped a what we call an R6 or a 19H1 build. Mm-hmm. The fast ring without any warning whatsoever that they were going to do this. Even in the past, when they've been kind of vague about the schedule, Donna Sarkar, someone would get on Twitter or on the blog and say, look, if you want to get off the train, you know, we're not saying exactly what day, but someday this week we're going to ship a build. You need to get off the train. I find that whole thing to be very, I don't know. I like these people. I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but it's just unprofessional. And I feel
you're right. Like, if you're going to change the rules of how this works, you need to warn people you're going to change the rules, right? And I feel like skipping the release preview and then suddenly rushing out with 19H1 and there's no like window in between. It's like, oh, wait, I get what you guys think you're trying to do. You're trying to speed up the build process so that updates will happen quicker and people will feel like it's just more seamless. But that isn't really what's happening. Instead, people who are used to the way you've been doing it are counting on it continuing that way, right? And then when you change the rules...
There's a system that is supposedly in place where you have different rings and different ways to test things. And the attention to detail here is non-existent, right? They didn't ship any slow ring builds for months and months, and then all of a sudden they ship a bunch of them. It's just been very sporadic and weird and poorly done. And but regardless, I mean, it's not possible for me in my current state to explain what happened here, but at a very high level – this is the type of thing I've been complaining about for years now with Windows 10, unfortunately, which is that there's a twofold problem. I don't feel that the Insider Preview program speaks to the broader community of Windows users and are not mm-hmm. doing a good job of communicating to Microsoft what actual people want in this product. And Microsoft is not taking the feedback that they're providing and doing anything meaningful with it. Mm-hmm. And we see this again and again and again. Every time there's a screw up like this, we had the Kindle blue screen thing a year ago. We had the botched release of 1803 earlier this year, and now we have 1809 going out and then being pulled back.
Yeah.
Every single time, whatever the issue was, people had in fact provided that feedback that this is a problem and you need to fix it, and they just ignored it.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things they said in the blog post this week about, you know, it was almost – At first I was like, oh, this is really good. They're doing almost like a postmortem about what went wrong. And they described this whole thing about mm-hmm. known folder redirection, right? And how autosave in OneDrive, that also may have been part of the reason that people were losing their data. So I'm like, okay, good. They're giving the report. But then I was like, but they didn't actually say how this got through, right?
Right.
They actually did say
that they heard about it. That's the
right. They said they heard about it. Right.
They did, which is good
that they admitted that, right?
I guess.
But then their solution going forward, which we don't know that much about, is they're going to have some kind of a severity indicator in the feedback hub now so that people can upvote when something is very severe and make it more apparent to the engineers on the team that, hey, I'm not just complaining like dark mode isn't dark enough. I'm complaining like my data is getting lost. Like, let's give that a higher rating.
But I'm
unclear how that's going to work, right?
I am clear that it isn't, and here's why. A, that kind of thing should have been part of the bug reporting process from day one. Are you kidding me? You don't have any method of someone identifying how severe this problem is? B, they should already have a system in place to understand why things are severe. For example, if a lot of people report it, or the same thing, or they get a lot of upvotes on something. I think that's the point of telemetry, right? Is that you kind of analyze the data in some way that's meaningful.
Right. Did they get a lot of upvotes on this though? Because when I read about this, I think from Raphael, people weren't upvoting the data loss thing, which I'm like, wait, why weren't they?
Okay. But if like the Kindle thing, for example, something you're doing as innocuous as plugging in a USB cable with a Kindle attached to it is blue screening your computer. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to have 600 people upvoting it to understand why that's a problem. You know, again, this is a company that sells its AI prowess to customers, and it doesn't even have the internal tools it needs to determine what's important and what isn't important. Mm-hmm. If you see the words dark theme in a bug report, you can pretty much be assured it's not super important. You know, I struggle with this because, you know what, what's weird? This year, we've seen two Windows 10 feature updates that have been completely devoid of nonsense new features, right? Really high quality mm-hmm. from a content standpoint. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, the core development of Windows has returned to the adults at Microsoft, the Azure group, right? So you would think that this would be the high quality part of the operation at this point, that the people we need to worry about are the experiences people are going to try to slip stupid stuff into the product. Instead, it's been the complete opposite. This has been like bizarro world. The actual process of shipping Windows this year has been a nightmare. And the guys I'm kind of afraid of, frankly, have done a great job. And I don't even know what to think anymore. It's kind of strange.
Well, you know what I think, and I don't have any way to prove this, but I feel like the policies and the processes for how this whole rollout, how testing works first. So there's the canary ring, which is Microsoft testing their builds, then the fast ring, skip ahead fast ring, and then slow ring, release preview mm-hmm. ring. That still remains in place, right? Even though we've shifted where the center of power lies now for Windows engineering. They're still using that same system, I believe.
What part of the org is that under? In other words,
I would guess under engineering, right?
I would guess so too.
Yeah. So, and until somebody in engineering says, "Guys, this isn't working. We need to rip up the policies and the infrastructure and the way we've been doing this and start over," and get this under control, it's not going to change.
Ultimately, you know, this is something in Mary Jo, obviously Leo, both, everyone here knows this very well. I mean, if you go back over the years, no matter what the beta testing process is, the problem with Windows ultimately is that it's a hugely complex piece of software that runs on some incredible combination of hardware configurations, probably uncountable. And you can test it however you want to test it. It doesn't matter if we're talking about Windows 98 back in the day or Windows XP or Windows 10 today. Mm-hmm. Once you start pumping that thing out to an actual crowd of human beings with all their weird computers, people don't test software and don't provide feedback. You start seeing problems you never see.
Yeah.
You
know?
There's something else at play, though, because this has happened now to Microsoft, but also to iOS a number of times. They do big public betas. I think what else is at play is that you have operating systems now that are installed in rapid order by millions of people. And I think that was Cable's point when he said it's 0.01%. If it's a thousandth of 1%, if 5 million people are installing something in the first week, you're going to have thousands of problems, if that's a very rare. And in this case, I think it's kind of a weird problem.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that. But
I think
we're in a world now where you got these massive operating systems. It's going to be very hard to have a perfect release ever.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's fair to say. You know, for example, remember when this build, when it first came out to the Fast Ring, the assumption from a lot of people, including myself, was this is the build. This is going to be the build. Mm-hmm. And people kind of came back to me and they said, well, this can't be the build. If you notice, they say they have some known issues with this build. And they hadn't had known issues for a couple of builds before that.
There's no anything that doesn't have known issues.
No, right. But for Windows specifically, the way I sort of answered that problem was, right, but they have a system in place to handle this. So they have there's always a cumulative update that comes out on day one with any Windows 10 release that addresses these things. And you see the way they kind of increment the minor part of the build number. They don't go to a new build. They just kind of do... Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the build numbers point something, and that's how they fix it. And because at some point you do have to draw the line. I get that.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, by the way, how they're handling this. So there's not a new build number of Windows 10 coming out, a major build number. It's the same build, right? But they fixed it and they're kind of revving it. And it's something that could be fixed by a cumulative update. The problem is when you've created data loss for a customer. You can't necessarily go back with a software fix and get
that's
the,
a pretty bad one.
Be gone. And actually, by the way, I should read the little part of that because it's crazy. Sadly, for people who have experienced data loss, Microsoft's advice there is not particularly useful because for some people, there's not going to be a good answer here. And what John Cable wrote is, we cannot guarantee the outcome of any file recovery work. If you have manually checked for updates and believe you have an issue with missing files, please minimize your use of the affected device and contact us directly at 1-800-MICROSOFT.
That's because they don't want you to overwrite because the data is not erased. You know what happened. They don't want you to overwrite it.
My God, what are you going to get when you call them? Like grief counseling? I mean,
no, they're going to tell you to go to telling people to go to Recover. Download Recover.
Yeah. Recover.
Yeah, it's what it's called, RECUVA. It's an unerasing program, and in many cases that's sufficient.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. The problem I have with this particular issue is that if you're following good practices, you would never lose data, right? You should always be backing up and all that kind of stuff.
The other point of this is, the guy lost 220 gigabytes. You have 23 years of data on a hard drive, and you're not backing it up.
Oh, it's worse than that, Leo. You have 23 years worth of data in your My Documents folder? What are you, from the past?
No, exactly.
This stuff should be synced to OneDrive or backed up in some other way.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
And none of that would have been lost, right? I mean, there's no...
That said, can I guarantee that my mother or my wife...
No, I know. That's why this is terrible, because that's who it affects. It doesn't.
Exactly.
Right.
We talked about whether you believe it or not, what Cable's explanation of this is? Have we talked about that?
We just kind of glossed over it.
Because I used to do this all the time.
Yeah.
Which is, now, I don't know if, I don't understand this phrase he's using about the relocation, the so-called, what do they call it?
KFR.
Known folder redirection.
I don't know what that is, but in the past, when I've had two drives, I've routinely right-clicked on my documents, gone to properties, and the advanced properties is a path, and you can have the path changed to D. Mm-hmm. It will then say, okay, do you want me to move everything over? And you say yes. And
so,
and I've done that many times. Is that what we're talking about?
Sort of. It's kind of the modern OneDrive file sync version of that. The idea is that OneDrive can take over for some of your most commonly used folders so that that information is always synced from machine to machine. If you're syncing your documents folder, you'll have the same documents on every machine. I don't use that feature. I do, however, use OneDrive to sync what I'm working on. I've created my own folder structure under OneDrive, and that's what I sync from machine to machine. So when I travel next week, when we're going to Dublin, for example, I have the folder for this month, which is the things I'm working on currently to do, which is the things I want to get done in the near future. And then a few other things around, you know, images, whatever, things I might want to put in articles. But I don't go to the documents folder, you know, like but people work different ways, you know, and I think the big problem with this is, like, in addition to it impacting normal people just across the board, if you're kind of a normal person and you upgraded to some version of Windows and now they have kind of a slightly different way of doing things and you kind of bought into that, it's going to impact you too. And I don't think those people understand how this stuff works. And that's the thing that bothers me the most. This is a company.
No, you're totally right about that. Cloud. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the HP Spectre, when I got that, for the longest time, I was saving documents, and I thought I was saving them to OneDrive. And then one day, I was like, where are these documents going? And they were going into, like, this folder that was called, like, Temporary State or something.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, oh.
That's not good.
No. And I'm like, well, who set this up? I didn't, you know?
Okay, that's it. So now Microsoft – okay, now in my mind, Microsoft is more to blame. Because you could reasonably think, well – it's got a backup. It's backing it up for me.
You could think that. Yeah.
That's the worst, too. If you're not particularly sophisticated, which most people shouldn't be when they're just using a computer, you don't have to know how gasoline makes a power go or whatever. You know, you should be able to just use the computer and not worry about it. You believe that this thing is working properly. You should. It usually does. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is I was just talking to Brad about this today. There's a central problem with Microsoft and it's the culture of Microsoft and how it rewards new things over fixing old things, you know, finishing the job. This is very much along those lines. And when you install a new feature update, which is what this is, right, a new version of Windows 10, this thing silently changes a bunch of your defaults. And the goofy thing is Windows does sync some stuff from computer to computer. And then there's this other stuff it doesn't. And for some reason, some of those things just reset. And so one of the examples of that is if I reload up Paint and I paste something into it and I want to save it as a file. After a version upgrade, the first time I do that, the view goes to compute. Well, in my case, computer is something slightly different, but it's the this PC view. You can't save a file there. So the default save as dialog that comes up presents me with this view, which is not usable. And I hit save and it goes, bam. You cannot save to this location. I've already configured it to go somewhere else, but because it did the upgrade, it has reset that. That thing is not part of what syncs through your OneDrive.
Yeah.
And there are many examples of this kind of thing. And you, for example, I don't know what happened with that known state thing exactly, but I semi-guarantee it was something slightly related to that where you are just saving and not thinking about it because you're normal. Mm-hmm. And why would you think? Well, you shouldn't have to think about it. It always works. And then when it didn't work, you know, one day it was saving somewhere else. And we'll never know why, really. But
and a different PC, it saves in a different place, right? Like on another Windows 10 laptop, it's saving into a different folder. And I didn't even have one called whatever it was, like temporary state or I forget exactly what it was called. But yeah, so there's no like continuity or common, like it always saves to X. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. And, you know, part of the problem with this whole Windows as a service thing, aside from the fact that it's nonsense, is that you have this incredibly complex system and you are presenting this thing as if it were just, look, we're going to make Windows better. Mm-hmm. You are, in fact, installing a major new release of this operating system. You are blowing away everything that was on that computer before, installing something from scratch, reapplying some of your settings and hopefully all of your data, and then presenting it to the user as if you did nothing to the computer. Mm. The sheer weight of that process is so incredible. And the fact that they're trying to kind of obscure it and make it seem like it's this, it's just like an iOS thing. It's fine. Yeah. You know, it's not.
Do you think this is legacy code? Is it going to change at all now that we're doing Delta updates and only updating the refresh bits? I mean, do you think that will help with that?
Okay, so no. And here's the thing. I think it will make it go faster, but I think that means it could also fail faster, right? In other words, take the thing I just described, and now you're going to say that the software is going to Delta update individual files, just the parts of those files that have been updated. This is just a more complexity, more places where things can go wrong. It will be a little shorter, the process, right?
Yeah.
And it will make it seem like, to the user, it's less of a big thing that just happened. Because now instead of half an hour, it takes 20 minutes. You're like, oh, yeah, see, this is a better thing. It's a simpler thing. It's not. It's still the same giant process.
Yeah.
And I look, if this computer went south today and I lost everything, what I would lose maybe is a few files on my desktop. And that would be it. And I'm not worried about it, you know, but I'm not worried about people like me. This is the thing with the Insider program. I'm not worried about people in the Insider program either. Mm-hmm. They can get that stuff, but they understand how things work.
Right.
The problem is it's their uncles and their cousins and their brothers and sisters. It's people who are just are working, banks or insurance companies or whatever. Yeah. They turn the thing on. Excel comes up. They, type some numbers. They don't think about these things. They shouldn't ever have to.
You know, I'll tell you what worried me about the cable post more than anything was I never really thought about the fact that when insiders are testing Windows 10, you're not necessarily just testing Windows 10. You're supposed to be testing all these other things that work with Windows 10. So, like, I had never thought about, are all insiders testing Windows 10 with OneDrive? You know, because this is where this problem kind of came to a head, right? And I'm like, well, there may be people testing who either don't use OneDrive or use another alternative, cloud storage alternative to OneDrive. And so then that opens up the whole idea of, so who's testing even just the Microsoft products integrating with the Microsoft products? Because I think insiders are supposed to just be testing Windows, right?
We don't have access to Microsoft's telemetry data. It's kind of hard. You know, I don't know. But,
yeah, I know.
You know, again, by nature, this group is going to be enthusiasts, right? People who don't mind throwing a beta operating system on a computer that they might actually use for work or something. And that, you know, it's not necessarily representative of the wider user base. You know, somebody sent me an email and said, I don't see what the big deal is. I sync everything to OneDrive or whatever, and everything works fine. And, you know, and it's like, great. But, you know, not everyone is like you. Mm-hmm. And this is the important, this is empathy. You need to understand this, you know, that everyone does things differently. And from Microsoft's perspective, it's not empathy. It's just common sense. You need to make sure this thing works across all of these scenarios, whatever it is. Yeah. If people aren't using OneDrive or are using Dropbox or are using whatever. You know, there's a responsibility there. And they explained what happened. What they didn't explain is why it happened.
That's the part I was waiting for. Like, how did this get through the cracks, right? Like, here's what happened.
Here's what happened, and here's the process we put in place. This will never happen again. Well, congratulations, TSA. You've solved the last problem. But the thing is, every time there's a release, there's a new set of problems.
I know, right?
You know,
because there's going to be a new set of things to new set of things to test, especially now that we're adding into the equation like Android phones and iOS, and like now everybody's going to have to be testing. Okay, what about the syncing with my Android phone? And if I change these bits, does this screw up that syncing? So now we're adding even more levels of complexity to the matrix of things that people are supposed to be testing.
Yeah. I mean, this may be why Terry Morrison wanted to push S mode so heavily, sort of understanding the complexity of the situation and it just kind of dreaming or wishing if we could just get to this future where Windows are simpler, you know, maybe this stuff wouldn't be as much of a problem. Maybe, you know, I don't know, but unfortunately, you know, the reality of Windows today is it is this complex. And I just don't understand. This is just, again, this is the part of the company, I should say the part of Windows that I kind of think I shouldn't have to worry about. I do think of them as adult run, right? Process driven scientist types.
Right.
This kind of thing makes me really nervous that I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, reading Cable's description of what happened, I understand why it's 1/100 of 1% of people, because it's a complicated, bizarre, you had to use an early version of the OneDrive client and then turn on autosave. And then, but you didn't move the files from the old location to the new location. Yeah. And I mean, it's complicated. It's easy, obviously, for somebody to do, but it's also probably an unlikely sequence of steps for most people. That's why the real problem is that it showed up in the testing months ago, right? That's what Raphael found, the real problem.
This had been something that people had been complaining about for months. And when this thing was released, I started getting emails about this. And I contacted Brad Mahedy, and I eventually forwarded six of these emails to Mahedy, who wrote an article about this before they pulled it. I don't know. Are six people all that important?
I'm willing to give statistically, I think you're going to have bugs. You're going to have flaws. Some might pass by, but if you were warned about a serious bug, a data deletion bug, I would say is as serious as it gets.
Yeah.
And didn't fix it. Having some sort of seismic meter that the user pushes saying, well, this is a class 10 tsunami.
Yeah. By the way, Leo, if you think enough to go to some feedback hub and provide Microsoft with a bug report,
it's
always going to be rated 10.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
I don't care what it is.
I know.
The problems I have are always important.
It feels like that's almost just a sop to people to make them feel better.
I know. It does.
Because Microsoft should have caught it. A data deletion error is a serious error.
Yeah.
Should have caught it and should have fixed it. We know they had the information to do so and didn't.
And once it started rolling out, the problem showed up in a Reddit thread like right away.
Instantly.
It was pretty fast how fast that showed up. And at that point, you've got to be like, okay, so they should have pulled it like then.
But they did pull it quickly, right? I mean, it wasn't too long.
Three days later?
No, that's enough. That's enough time.
There are some facts that he provides that are worth noting. I mean, Microsoft does do a stage rollout. They go out to the machines they think are most likely to be successful first. One of the reasons they have a stage rollout like this is that if something like this happens, they can pause the release, right? Make sure everything's okay. In this case, they're going to have to reissue it as a slightly different build number, minor build number. If you were taking a really partisan viewpoint, pro Microsoft, you could say that the system works.
We caught it.
But this is this is like my son one time kind of bobbled a bottle and he was kind of fumbling with it and then he was just about to smash on the ground and he caught it and then he said ninja. And I said, the ninja doesn't drop the bottle. You just caught it at the end. I said, if you were a ninja, you never would have done that. And the point here is that this is something that should have been caught before you released the thing.
Yeah.
So the other part I wanted to talk about for this is we've talked on the show before about what we think could be done to kind of fix this situation to some degree. And I actually got a letter in email the other day from someone who said, you're old enough to remember XPSP2.
I never finished letters that begin that way.
Yeah.
I wasn't insulted because I'm like, okay, where is he going with this?
You're old enough to remember Shirley Temple, aren't you?
Exactly.
Remember when the world
was
black
and white. No, he was right because his analogy was good. He said, remember when they did the security reset at Microsoft and they had to just drop all work on features and everybody was put on the security team? He's like, this is what they need to do for Windows 10 right now.
Yeah.
Reliability.
That's a great point.
Boom.
I just talked to a guy from the Windows NT, the Windows team at that point, about this topic. It's funny they mentioned this because they just had their 25th, the NT 25th anniversary, whatever, or NT, which version, 3 something, 3.5, whatever. at the time, there were two kind of warring factions over this XPSP2 thing because they put so much stuff into it not new features typically. Oh, there was a, you know, a firewall and stuff like that, but I mean, not too many end user features that they could have, and maybe arguably, depending on who you talk to, should have presented it as Windows XP 2, a new version. You could have charged people for it. And then at that point, there's this extra, you know, another crowd on the side who says, well, hold on a second. We have these features here we were going to put in the next version of Windows. If you're going to do that, let's put that in there too. And of course, back then, again, adults running the show, no. We are giving this away for free so that people actually install it. And we are not putting new features in it because we're fixing problems.
Yep.
And this was 2002, 2003, 15 years ago. Right? And I've always kind of patted Microsoft on the back for this because to this day, you can look at any platform maker. You want to look at Apple with the Mac and then with iOS or Google with all the garbage they put out. Has never done this. They've never done this. There has never been a trustworthy computing initiative from another company to the scope of what Microsoft did. They literally halted development of everything they were working on so they could fix this problem. It's incredible. But what I've never thought of is what that person told you, which is right. That's exactly what Windows 10 needs right now. Exactly.
Right.
Finish the job.
It's tough if you're the managers, right? Because you're like, okay, now we're going to really, you know, get everybody in a tizzy who wants us to keep doing new features. But for enterprises, who is Microsoft's main constituency here, I think they would be like, yes, this is awesome. You're going to stop new features for like one release or two releases and just fix the reliability and quality.
Here's an idea, Microsoft. How about rewarding people for this for a change, right? In other words, the best and the brightest, instead of you moving on to the next big thing, whatever nonsense with AI in the word, why don't you fix Windows and make – or fix whatever. I mean, you could apply this quality initiative to any product that Microsoft makes, honestly. Reward people for doing that because you're right.
Yeah.
Their biggest and best customers are businesses, and that's the type of thing they appreciate, not new emoji in the next release or some stupid 3D feature or whatever it is. It doesn't matter if there are some people who like that stuff. There are some people who like every bit of nonsense on earth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they have to run the drive the train.
Right.
Like you should focus on what's important to the customers who are most important and are the biggest set of customers for sure.
I think there's a chance this actually could happen because of what happened with the reorg, right? So you put the engineering team under Azure and under Jason Zander, who's a very no-nonsense guy, and it's like, okay, I don't think he'd have a problem just saying, guys, we're going to do this. And on the experiences side, they're now under Rajesh Jha. So he ran Office. Office is a lot about fundamentals. Yes, they do add new features also, but they always are very focused on the fundamentals. And so I think now that you have these two pillars in place, this actually could potentially
happen. I agree
with
you. Two things to that. You know, we talked about my Brad Anderson conversation last week, and he talked about some of the stuff that they would do to engage the enterprise on what's happening in Windows 10. Mm-hmm. But as far as Office goes, you know, something very interesting there. Remember the year 2007 or whatever, when they started adding the ribbon to Office, one of the big decisions they made that was proven to be incorrect was that they were not going to support the legacy menu and toolbar UI at all. When they went ribbon, it was all ribbon all the time. There's no going back. And the rationale for it at the time was that it would be too complex to support two different kind of user interfaces. And I think most people here that are like, oh, yeah, I guess I understand that. But when you flash forward to the Microsoft of today, you have an understanding that there are lots of different kinds of people and they work in different ways. Some people want something really simple and streamlined, and some people are like super professionals and they live in Excel and they want the giant interface at the top. Mm-hmm. Now they're supporting both, right? So when they move to the simplified ribbon, which is basically just a tab toolbar, there's going to be a little switch. You can go back to the full ribbon. They're going to do that thing today that they should have done 12 years ago, whatever that is, 11 years ago, that Office group could never have done because they were a different group of insane people. Yeah. But so that also gives me hope for the Windows side of it because you're right. This is the same group now, right? Maybe this is a benefit of this Microsoft 365 thing, which is that kind of thinking can infect or heal, I guess, the guys on the Microsoft side, the Windows side.
Mm. Let's take a little break, and then I'm sure we have more to say about this topic.
Okay.
Or not. We cannot spend any more time on it, but it's fascinating. I guess we've kind of said it all. So they put it on hold. It's coming out now, right?
Right. So if you're an insider and you're in slow ring or at least preview ring, you got it yesterday to retest it.
Okay. So right. they're yep. doing the install testing.
Yep.
And then later.
Hold on to your butts.
Not like I can really remember or even notice any new features, so don't rush to get this. I think. You know, get it when you get the all clear.
This one was going
to
go great. I really did.
You're actually be interested in this. This is a new sponsor. It's called Prilock Security. And if you are running a business, as I am, one of the things that comes up for us all the time is, you know, we do everything we can to keep everything secure. But really, there's always a weak link in this, and that's your employees. This is the kind of training everybody needs, whether you're in a business or not. Prilock Security trains people to be suspicious, to be cynical, to be careful not to get hacked. And they do it in a great, engaging way. You actually will make phishing emails. They will. Let me tell you how it works. It's actually really cool. 91% of all successful hacks start with a phishing email. That is really problem number one. Sony Pictures Entertainment, the Democratic National Committee. It was a spear phishing, a targeted email with a malware attached. But there's also social engineering, you know, calls to the customer support. There's also things like, I didn't know the name for this, a candy drop. But hackers call it a candy drop, where they kind of, you know, spray out little USB keys around the parking lot of your business, right? Just on the, oh, look, here's a 64 gigabyte USB key. Awesome. And the employee takes it in. And then goodbye to the rest of your business, whether it's ransomware or it's even worse stuff, espionage. So Prilock trains people not to get bit. It's a best-of-breed security training program. It does phishing tests. It does security briefings. It's very affordable. They have a very innovative supply chain, so they can do this for about 70% less than comparable programs, which means it's affordable, which means you can do it. Whether your company's 50 people or 5,000 people, you can create a full year's training in less than a minute. You won't need an IT professional. So what you get, and I love this, a 3-day baseline phishing test, a custom user page for each employee with lots of resources, information, software, you know, password managers, things like that. You get a security awareness training, which I did the other night. I actually learned some stuff. It was good. The fun part about it, don't tell your, I won't, I hope I'm not, no spoiler. Well, it is a spoiler here. You're in the middle of the training. This nice lady's teaching you, and this hacker hacks it and says, get out of here. Let me show you what I, and you learn why they hack, how they hack, and you even get to kind of learn some hacking techniques. There's, a final assessment for compliance mandates, so you can say, you know, it, for compliance purposes to whoever it is, federal agencies or clients, look, we've done this test and passed. But what I also like about this is Prilock Security will then run throughout the year 24, average 2 a month, additional random tests. It's not like random drug testing. These are phishing emails that your employees will get. They are very good. And they're testing the employees to see if they click the link. And if you click, the first time you get, hey, look, this was a phishing email. You fell for it. Here's what to pay attention to. And if you get a lot of clicks, you get enrolled in, you get specific injection training videos. It will also email reports to administrators. And you get analytics, real-time analytics, 24/7 analytics as the boss. If you're an experienced IT professional, they have advanced setups, so you have even more control over the campaigns, over the training. They have a growing library of over 600 of the most effective phishing emails ever used, and they're going to put those, and it's growing all the time, they're going to put those to use. It's effective security training on the psychology used by hackers. It's not a list of do's and don'ts. That, we know, doesn't work as well as understanding how they're doing this and why they're doing it and what it looks like. Phishing test all sorts of things, whether the phish email was opened, whether the links were clicked, whether attachments were downloaded, whether macros were enabled. So they'll send you a Word document that says, enable macros to see this document. And if you enable macros, boom. Then there's another one where they say, you know, hi, this is the boss. I need your credit card number. I need your social security number. We're going to update our files. And if you enter your social security number, you're going to get a video. You're going to get a little extra training. This is awesome. I mean, honestly, I told them, I said, they do it for business. It's very affordable. Companies as small as 25 employees, $395 for a year security program. They also, though, I said, you got to do this for individuals. He said, all right, we're going to make it available. We're going to make a single license gift card you could give your friends, your family, the people you know. Every one of us has, you know, we're smart enough not to fall for this, but every one of us has family members. We just like tear our hair out and go, oh, Dad, not again. Send them the little gift card. They get 2 fish tests a month for a year. I love this. Look, you're not going to ever learn all the ways hackers work because they're constantly updating their techniques, but PryLock will show your employees the psychology that's being used so they're not the next victim. And you know what? That's good because that means you won't be the next victim. I talked to Dan about this, the guy who developed the training, and I just really admire what he's done. PryLock, PryLock.com/twit. If you use a promo code Leo, you'll save an additional 30% off of their very low cost for this training. I know you've been thinking about this for your company, if you run a company, for your family and friends, if you're the tech support. Stop thinking and let's do something. Let's do something because it's good for everybody. PryLock.com/twit. And don't forget the promo code Leo for 30% off. Back to Paul, back to Mary Jo, back to the woes and wherewithals of Windows. Windows.
Leak woe be gone.
Leak woe. Oh, yeah. I like it. Leak woe be gone. Where everybody's above average.
Where everyone has experienced data loss.
The funny thing is, yesterday, Patch Tuesday, I got a cumulative update to 1809 because I was a seeker, had no problems, and I got an update. Did that fix my data loss fix problem?
Yep, no. The data loss was in it.
But I didn't have the problem.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Let me step back. That actually, the fix was in it?
That's what I guess Microsoft told somebody else who I linked to, Morrow.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Learns from this show.
Yeah. I asked them if the fix was in it, and they wouldn't comment.
Is the fix in?
I believe the data loss
fix is in.
Mary Jo,
cumulative
the fix is in.
It is in. It's in, all right.
That's. I did not know that. Okay.
Well, if what they told Mauro is correct, it should be in there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's in there. No,
you'd be
good.
Dumb
it's
not
good.
To put it in there.
No kidding. Right? It should just be in there because...
Talk about adding insult to injury. Not only do we know about it, not only do we pause it, but for those of you who got it, we didn't fix it.
We didn't fix it anyway.
Of course they fixed it. They had to.
Well, it just might not be ready that quick is my own...
True. Right. Because it's still in testing with the insiders, right?
Yeah. So. But it seems to me this is the kind of thing you can at least say, before I delete this directory, let me just see if there's anything in it kind of thing. I mean...
Yeah, there was an update to the servicing stack that was part of Patch Tuesday yesterday for Windows 10, which I also asked them about, and I said, what's in the servicing stack? And they said, we don't have anything more to say. Okay.
We've told you all we're going to tell you, Mary.
Yeah, it's a servicing
right
stack
there.
Update.
The fix is in, Mary. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to Leak Will Be Gone.
What a tangled web.
Yes.
So we think you got the fix. If you did, like Leo, get the update.
I was a safe seeker.
Successfully.
Yes.
Right. You should be okay in theory.
Well, I don't use whatever this thing is anyway.
Known folder redirection.
Yeah. Although I have to say, Apple's doing this now too, which really bugs me, where they just kind of automatically turn on these cloud services and store things in unknown places. Do you have to turn this on literally? I mean, maybe I'm using it and I don't know. Is that possible?
It's possible, but I doubt that you are.
Okay.
Let me hedge my bet a little more. No, I mean,
should I, like, if you save a file and it shows up in My Documents, is that a good sign?
I don't think that's ever a good sign, personally.
Okay.
But
all right. Okay. You know,
no, by the way, that's one of the things that changes on that reboot. You know, so I there's no setting. It's not like you can go somewhere and say, I want turn all files to save it here. You can't really. Right. I mean, actually, there is a setting like that in OneDrive. But as far as I'm using an application, it doesn't matter what it is. And I save to that month folder I was talking about. When I reboot the install an upgrade to the computer, to the operating system, and I reboot, the first time I go to save a file, it will try to save the documents folder, you know?
Right.
And because I've chosen to do my own thing, and because I don't have a way to configure that, I have to watch out for that. And I know to watch out for that. And these goofy resetting, you know, these resettings of settings, whatever that means, you know, hit me every time I do this. And because you're, you know, I'm an insider, it happens all the time.
I'm doing a save as in Word, and it gives me OneDrive personal, this PC.
So that's not a good example, unfortunately, because Word and all the Office applications have their own screwy interface for this.
Yes,
and
they do.
You can pin locations, and it's what I'm talking, like open up Paint, for example.
Okay.
Paint is probably not a horrible. And if you do like a save as.
Yeah, let me draw something. Okay.
Now,
beautiful work of art.
You've probably never used it, so it will probably be pointed at the pictures folder.
Let me see. Where'd it go? There it is. Okay. File, save as. And it's pointed at this PC.
Oh, this PC. This is the magic. So try to enter a name and try to save it there. You'll see what I see all the time. So you probably got that because, well, actually, why would you get it with Paint? Well, anyway.
Okay, I saved it to this PC, but where does this PC, where is that?
There's no location. You can't save a file there.
It can't. It won't.
Right.
So now I have to choose documents, pictures, music. So I'm going to put it as a logical person in pictures. That's now saved physically in pictures, right?
Yeah. So if you were to close Paint and use Paint 17 days from now, whatever it is, for the first time again, and you went to save something, it would go to that place. You know, it kind of remembers where you were last time. I always use Paint to save folders to the desktop because I use it as a scratch space. And then when I'm done with those things, I'll push them into one of those month folders I was talking about. That's just the way I work. It doesn't really matter. But that's one of the many things that gets reset when you install an upgrade, which, again, is not the same as installing a cumulative update or a quality update. It's literally an upgrade of the operating system. And it switches a lot of things off, or it switches a lot of things back to whatever the weird defaults are. That's just one example.
By the way, it's not letting me save into the pictures folder either. It's just nothing's happening when I press save.
Interesting. That should not be the case.
Is it trying to make you save to the cloud? Is that why?
I can't save it. You can't save to this PC, it says. Okay, fine. Please choose other locations. That's very confusing, I might add.
That's very confusing.
Because what do you mean I can't save to this PC? That happens to be... Okay, it did save. I don't know why I didn't save before. Oh, because I had a weird name, I guess. I had a question mark in the name. I named a file. Where is this?
By the way, another small pet peeve with Windows. If you have a file name with like a colon or a question mark, here's an idea.
Yeah?
Replace those automatically in the file name.
Don't just not do anything.
Skip them. Put a dash in. I don't care. Just don't ever make me have to go through a long file name and find the stupid problem that you have.
Right.
Just fix it.
Well, it didn't even tell me there's a problem. Just the save button just didn't do anything.
So
Untitled, which it replaced, where is this file, is saved in pictures, as I expected.
Right.
What's going on? Anything? Do I have to?
Well, you're going to lose this file the next time you upgrade, but don't worry about that now.
I went not using the thing, the kit, no
file.
No,
but you won't have this problem because they fixed it. See, you'll have another problem. That's the beauty of this.
You'll have a whole different problem. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, this is my whole pet peeve about Conversation View, right? It comes back every time almost that I do a feature update to Windows 10. Like, I'm like, okay, I shut this off, and here it is again. It's here again. It's like...
We've been kind of dumping on Windows for a little while. Let's turn the conversation to Office, which does the same thing, right? So Office, like Windows, has a set of settings that it saves to your account and will bring back the next time you use Office on a different device or whatever. And then there's a ton of ones that it doesn't, you know. And so I don't use Microsoft Word to write anymore. But if I did, one of the things I would do is go into the autocorrect settings, which takes a little while. It's in there in a menu and a dialogue, whatever. And I turn off things like change three dots in a row to an ellipsis or whatever. And I have my own little ways I like to change things because I'm kind of publishing as text or whatever. Does not save those. You have to manually and deliberately reset every one of those things every single time you use Office again for the first time on a different computer. It's the same thing, right? It's the same kind of issue. It's the complete or finish the job thing. You know, like they do part of it. But there's no place to go to understand what they do and do not do. You come back from, on a new computer in this case or an upgrade in the Windows 10 case, and you just see what's not there. After you sign in, it's just not particularly sophisticated.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Okay.
There it is.
Now we know. All right. What else do you want to talk about?
What do we have? We have other things. Surely we have other things.
We do. But you wanted to talk about Terry, which is kind of a nice segue to this whole thing, right?
Yeah. And maybe that's not really related to this, but you know, I really like Terry Morrison, and it's really striking to me months later how many times I've spoken to Microsoft employees and I've discovered that not everyone shares that view. But
yes,
you know, Terry was a tough competitor, you know, internally and whatever. And I talked about, I think last week, about Brad Anderson being kind of sent over to Terry's group about a year ago, and how strange it was to us on the outside that he would be in, you know, Terry's part of the company. And he told me at the time, actually for him, it was just as strange, but he was sent there by Satya Nadella to kind of infuse some enterprise chops into this organization because they weren't really particularly concerned about the enterprise. They were concerned about consumers. And obviously that effort has been successful. We've just talked about the last two feature updates and from a content perspective, how improved they are. I'm starting to wonder now, you know, a lot of the stuff, we talked about this a little bit last week. I talked about S Mode. I talked about the App Store, UWP apps. I hate to personalize it. I'm not saying it was Terry, but Terry coming up as he did out of the Windows Phone org. I mean, that part of that group, you might say collectively, kind of pushed this, what I would call like a very mobile platform-like agenda on Windows, and it wasn't necessarily particularly successful. But one of the things, you know, Mary Jo and I both know is that he was very hardline about this stuff. And I've talked about how S Mode was very hardline. You know, that why couldn't you let someone install the one app they wanted and then turn the mode on and let that app keep working? I mean, it's such a useful compromise, you know. Even if you don't get the 100% benefit of S Mode with regards to reliability or battery life or whatever it might be, you'd still get some advantage, right? And the as an organization, you know, the Windows team or whatever was never interested in that kind of compromise. And so I started thinking about Google and Microsoft and the weird relationship there, because when I talk to the developers at Microsoft in this case, their relationship with their peers at Google is excellent. You know, for example, the guys who work on PWAs, which technically are within the Windows org, have a great relationship with the guys who work on PWAs at Google. They work together. In fact, they've influenced each other. You know, they got some ideas from Google. Google has gotten the idea of putting PWAs in an app store from Microsoft. They've, you know, formalized this as a thing. It's going to work across platforms. You know, they work together. I don't know Microsoft, Google at a very high corporate level, but certainly Microsoft v. Google from a sort of a platform perspective, you know, Windows versus Chrome OS or Android or whatever. Not a lot of working together going on there. But, you know, with Microsoft opening up Windows to Android, especially on the mobile side, we saw a lot of that last week at the event. It occurred to me, you know, maybe Terry being gone might be what was needed for that relationship to come together. So, for example, I'd point to this from two perspectives. One is the addition of Chrome to the store, because arbitrarily, You are not allowed to, as a third-party developer, to put a browser in a store that does not use the Edge rendering engine, right? And Microsoft has all these reasons for it, reliability and performance and battery life, whatever it might be. But really, it's just kind of anti-competitive, isn't it? I mean, and I think that kind of policy is a lot like the UWP thing. Like the store has to be, it has to be a UWP app. That's changed. I'm wondering if this thing can't change, that maybe it's time to allow other browser makers to put their products in the store. There would be huge advantages to this, actually on both sides, right? As far as updating and consistency and so forth. And you could have that, they basically would be in containers. I mean, there's some kind of a security and safety aspect to it as well. And then the other one, of course.
Can I throw cold water on this idea?
Please.
If Microsoft ever lets Google put the browser in the store, Edge will die.
Edge is already dead.
I mean, it
how would
totally
you know if Edge is dead?
I know.
Yeah. No.
They keep trying to make this thing go.
But you're right. I mean, I guess what I would say is Microsoft makes these difficult kind of decisions
makes
all the
decision
time,
that right? They're going to drop Edge.
Edge never really goes away, even if the browser isn't a success, because that rendering engine is still an important part of blah, 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 whatever. But but for sure. But the other aspect of it, maybe this is more possible and more likely, is the formal inclusion of Google Web Apps, PWAs, in the Windows Store, right? That Google is known to be, literally has said they are moving all of their major web properties to become PWAs, that they could be added to the store formally by Google. Right, not by some goofy wrapper made by a kid in his parents' basement, but actual Google apps in the store. Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing maybe preventing that, of course, is just the normal competitive stuff. Google has a big push right now with Chrome on the desktop, and they're trying to supplant Windows in businesses and blah, 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 whatever. But, you know, maybe Google needs to make some difficult decisions too, because is it more important that, say, like an enterprise uses their online services or that an enterprise uses a Chromebook, you know, and that getting a company on Chrome, on the web apps, on the web services, on that subscription plan is probably a lot more important than selling them a $600 piece of hardware. So, you know, again, I'm obviously a crazy optimistic dreamer type of guy, but I sort of feel like, well,
hey,
but
John Lennon.
Yeah. Imagine all the people, Leo. I feel like this could happen, and I feel like the reason it hasn't happened, maybe the singular reason, is Terry.
I heard explicitly
Terry would never allow anything I just described.
Yeah. Also, what's happening, and it may be because of Terry or not linked to Terry and just happened to be happening at the same time, is Microsoft's basically realized UWP can't be this self-contained little thing that it originally was, and they've been expanding what counts as a UWP app, right? They're adding in more APIs, more Win32 APIs especially. And once PWAs are in the store in a massive way, I think that it won't really matter as much about, you know, trying to contain what can constitute a Windows Store app and all that.
Literally, right? Instead of arbitrarily requiring a hardline definition of what a store app is, they've expanded it to some crazy. It's
everything, pretty much.
It's everything.
Right.
Also, you know, this is another Microsoft cultural thing, but under Satya Nadella, I would say that this company has gone from pushing back against anything that could be slightly competitive to just embracing everything. In fact, you've got some stuff that we'll talk about a little bit more about that later. But this falls under that kind of category. I would say, you know, in some ways, Terry might have been one of the remaining kind of old school types in charge of a major Microsoft business at a time when the company as a whole is embracing diversity of ecosystems and competitors and whatever else. And you and I have kind of joked about how this makes us a little uncomfortable. I kind of like when Microsoft used to come out and stab people right in
everyone.
The back. You know, it's beautiful. Yeah. But this is the culture today. Yeah. Why can't we just apply that with a slightly broader brush to include everything in Microsoft, right? Instead of just most of Microsoft.
Right.
Just a thought.
Why can't? Why
can't we all just get along?
Just get along.
Imagine.
Now, I am very excited. And
yes.
Living in a world without strife.
Living for the day?
Yes. Hey. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Now, you could say I was a dreamer, but I'm not the only
one. You're not the only one, Paul. Oh, wow. What a beautiful... Actually, it's kind of sad because I think it was... isn't the anniversary of John Lennon's death right around now?
Maybe
December.
It's December 7th.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
We've got 51 minutes left, so I'm thinking we could probably do Hey Jude right now and just...
Let's play that. You know, DJs hate Hey Jude. You want to know why? You can't tell when it ends. And I counted up how many na, 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 how many? I think there were 27 of them. So I'm sitting there like an idiot with a record queued up, the next record. Back in the days, we had turntables, and my finger over the button, counting one, two, because I liked a good segue. Speaking of good segues, it's a little cloudy with a chance of gaming. Paul? Oh, now he takes a sip from his... Actually, I was excited about this. You had kind of hinted that Microsoft was going to do some sort of streaming gaming thing, and now we know. Mm-hmm. But it won't be here till next year. It's kind of a little bit of a premature announcement, if you ask me.
Mm. Yeah, the only thing I have to say about this really is that this announcement
X-Cloud.
Might have been driven by the fact that Google just announced something related to game streaming as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And they had hinted at this early in the year, Google, that is. And I sort of feel like Google obviously doesn't have a big play in gaming today other than the fact that there are games on Android. But they are one of the few companies like Microsoft, right, that has the infrastructure and the desire to reach out to consumers and could make this happen. So it's odd looking at the landscape in gaming today, but Google may eventually emerge as their big competitor in this space, you know, basically game infrastructure.
That would be good news for Microsoft because Google's really not showing a lot of, I don't know, gusto these days.
Gusto, wow.
Well, you know, they just killed Google Plus. I mean, they seem to be rapidly just kind of giving up on the whole thing and going home. By the way, it was John Lennon's birthday yesterday. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. That's what it was.
Okay. Yeah. I think is it December 4th maybe that he...
Maybe it's the 4th. I know it's in December because I was working at the radio station. We were decorating the Christmas tree when the news came and it was devastating.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't want to really talk about xCloud in any...
I'll talk about it.
I had 3 hours of sleep last night. And
Paul's counting the hours till he gets to go home.
About this,
please,
guys.
Mary
it's
Jo,
an Azure service.
Because there's Hadoop involved, I'm sure.
It probably is.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely... It's going to be built on Azure, which we knew already. But they posted a video. We didn't link to that, but they posted a little video about how they already have a blade running this in their Quincy, Washington Azure data center. So they already have this up and running and they're internally testing it. And the way they described it was they said they built custom hardware for the service by taking apart an Xbox console, breaking it into component parts, and then hosting the parts in the blades and then putting the blade in the data center. So I was like, huh, interesting. Look at that little video. I'm not making this up.
Oh, now I got to go get a video. Okay.
Yeah. It's in their announcement. It's very short, I believe.
Let's see here. Microsoft streaming announcement, blah, blah, blah.
Project xCloud gaming with you at the center.
By the way, that picture at the top is something I've been asking for forever, which is release a portable gaming console that's just an Xbox controller with a screen on top of it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
But you already have the screen and the computing power. The idea, I guess, of this is that you don't need
a engineers are fancy building a
computer.
Game streaming network to unlock console quality gaming on any device.
That is fake. By the way, that cheering, that's not real.
Our cloud engineers are building a game streaming network to unlock console quality gaming on any device.
Please.
There's 2 billion gamers in the world. Some of them have a PC, some of them have a console, some of them have a smartphone, some of them have all three.
What if everybody in the world could play Halo? What if everybody in the world could play Red Dead Redemption? Everybody in the world could play the games. What would we have to do in order to make that possible?
In order to
buy Minecraft,
that,
we could do that.
We believe we need to build a game streaming service.
We see game streaming as a great technology, giving you access to the games that you want to play on the device that you want to play them on.
Being able to compute in the cloud and then stream to whatever device I am on allow me to play with anybody. That's powerful.
When you think about any other form of media, the idea that it's locked to one device is...
I'm sorry, I can't
totally
help myself.
Absent. I want to be the center of my world, and I want the device...
Right, Joe, this is not short. It's 3 minutes and 45 seconds of fake people.
What is it?
Talking...
Cut to the part about the data center.
Oh, yeah, where's the blade? I want the blade. Let's find the blade.
First thing people say... We have our first rack of console hardware in the data center in Quincy today.
Here it is, in Quincy today.
We've taken an existing Xbox console. We've broken it out into its component parts and can actually build a single blade unit that can host multiple Xbox systems at one time. So we've actually built not just the blades themselves with the boards inside, but all the infrastructure associated with it.
That's kind of cool.
We have evolved the platform.
So you're still playing on an Xbox, but it's an Xbox.
Like over the cloud.
Over the cloud. Now, it looks like they have more than one blade server in there. They got quite a few.
We are going to be pushing
and look
the
how
edge
wide that screen
of what's
is.
Possible, even with 5G, which hasn't been deployed.
You're not getting the right message from this video.
I'm joking. Actual.
It's just amazing. You're playing your favorite game, and it's streaming.
And to
you'll be able to play with an Xbox One
console gamer. But now when I'm done with the console or my son walks into the room and he wants to
these
play
are real Microsoft
else,
employees.
I don't ever have to stop gaming because I'll be able to game the games that I love on every device.
I like this idea, but it's 2019, right? It's not going to, it's not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And imminent. Testing.
But again, this is, this plays to their strength. This is one of those things they can do.
Yeah.
Because they got the other Xbox companies are going to have a hard time duplicating.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of companies have attacked that hill and fallen by the wayside on live, right? Sony, I think,
but
did something.
These are companies that are like the corporate equivalent of the neighborhood lemonade stand, you know, compared to Microsoft.
Right. And so that's interesting. So Google, I don't know if Google announced it or there were hints about it, but...
No, they've talked about
have
it
they? Okay.
A couple times now. Yeah.
I think you're right, though. That's why they talked about it this week. I mean, why else would they talk about it this early?
Yeah, maybe a... CES announcement or E3 next year would have made more sense, something like that. But I think there was some fear that Google kind of ran away with this notion. And if they announced it later, it'd be like, you know, following in the footsteps of Google, Microsoft this week. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, great fun.
Yeah. And by the way, just want to point out, Mary Jo added an Xbox story to the notes.
Yay.
Guys, once there's an Azure angle, I'm all over it.
Actually, I should point out, Mary Jo added every single story to the notes because I was not worth a damn.
Didn't get any sleep.
Yeah, I know. I figured you were exhausted. I knew you were flying yesterday.
So, where were you that you... did you go to Italy for the weekend? What happened?
I went to Paris.
You literally went to Paris for the weekend.
It was a long weekend, Leo. Don't make
so
it seem
jealous.
Like
you have no reason to whine about lack of sleep. You went to Paris for the weekend.
I don't feel that I should have to not whine.
I am so jealous. You know, it's funny that you did that because I was saying to Lisa, you know, we could just, after the shows on Wednesday, just fly to Paris and spend a few days there.
Yep, you could.
You could. How was? Because you're on the East Coast. It's a little easier for you to get there. But
yeah, a little bit.
So was it fun? What'd you do?
It's great. We didn't do anything all that new. I mean, we hadn't been in a couple of years now, so we just kind of we walked 25,000 steps a day.
Stephanie wanted a cup of coffee, and you said, "You know, I know this little cafe on the Champs-Élysées."
Yeah, I do. Not on the Champs-Élysées, but
what's your cafe? Yeah. Where do you go in Paris?
So it depends. Well, actually, so the place we always go is La Terrasse. It's next to Ecole Militaire.
Oh yeah,
sort of
down by the Eiffel Tower.
What's the green space next to the Eiffel Tower there.
Nice. Really nice.
Yeah. I just posted a picture on Facebook, which is kind of cool. It's like my wife and I on the same bridge over like 3 years, over 12 years, you know, like every 5 or 6 years. It's the same.
Did you put one of those locks on the bridge that was about to collapse the bridge? Was that
No, I care about Paris, Leo. Okay. so, yeah.
Aww.
No.
I would go look at your picture, but I don't have a Facebook. Oh, wait a minute. I do have a Facebook account. In order to buy that camera from Facebook that follows you around in the room all the time and listens always to what you're doing, I had to actually reactivate my Facebook account.
Wow. You could reactivate an account?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Listen, we sorry you were gone for a few months. We'd like to show you some political ads you may have missed. Oh, also, if you haven't seen our new advertising, it's awesome. I would say 2018, one of the worst things, well, then there were a lot of terrible things this year, but like Facebook's kind of self-serving ads are unbelievable. They're unbelievable.
Well, and I got to say, a little tone deaf to, at this time, release a product that contains a camera that will follow you around autonomously.
Yeah.
Not, especially not into the voting booth, because we really want to influence that again.
Care.
If we can,
I'll make sure you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
All right. Insert your security key. Okay.
Where's the Yuba key?
My Yuba key. I keep it on my keychain for just. Oh, look at that. Save browser. It worked.
Oh, brother.
It worked. I am now back in Facebook. Now all I have to do is find Paul Thurrott. Oh, you're right.
I didn't mean to make this.
Nothing but political crap in here. Oh, my God. I want to see you two on a bridge in Paris. That's all I want to see. They'll edit all this out. Leave Paige?
There were people sitting in our spot. Wait a minute. I had to kick them out.
Which Paul Thurrott is you?
It's the top Paul Thurrott.
That doesn't look like Paul Thurrott.
That's not me.
Should I be concerned?
No, that's the guy's
been there. That's the handsome Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, that don't go to him.
is this you?
Yes.
Yes, standing on the Windows logo. Oh, look how young you are. And then look how old you are. Okay. Stephanie looks exactly the same, but...
Yeah, that's been commented to me many times. Yeah. Thank you.
Actually, you know what I'm really taking away from this? Look how much weight you've lost. Mm. Should I be worried about your health, Paul?
No, I have many, many pounds to go.
You look great. This is the most recent one.
Yeah.
Cute. Aww. And what do you do to take that picture? Do you ask a strange Parisian, a random Parisian?
Yeah, well, the first one, there was a strange Parisian. Actually, I think they offered to take it.
Yeah.
And then the last two, it was so someone in my family.
So cute. You know, it's funny, that boat is still there.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same boat.
The same old boat.
Yeah.
It's a very good rent. We like living there.
Actually the most, by the way, my one takeaway from this trip was nothing really actually changes there ever. You know?
That's why you go to Paris.
Yep.
It's the same as it ever was.
Yeah. If you like awesome.
They took the,
you know, I don't know.
To be fair, they took the guillotine out of the Place de la Concorde.
That's true. That's in my lifetime.
In your lifetime, though. No, you get that feeling, right? That, in fact, a lot of times I get kind of almost morbid thoughts like, this is going to look exactly the same after I'm dead kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I have this. Like when you come home from a long trip and you're kind of driving down the road to your house and nothing has changed because why would it? You've only been gone a week or whatever. But there's that kind of. Just that notion that you're not necessary, you know, for the world to occur.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, I would like to point out that the reason I was able to so quickly rejoin Facebook is because of LastPass. I have it all my credentials. I use two-factor authentication, which is awesome. There's my YubiKey.
Is that an actual YubiKey or is it a different
YubiKey? Yeah, no, I'm showing a fake YubiKey.
They have other keys.
No, it's even got a Y on it. There are other keys, but this is mine. And I love two-factor. One of the things we do with LastPass, because we use it in business too, LastPass Enterprise, is because it's the business version, you can have over 100 policies, including you must use two-factor. We don't require people have a YubiKey, but they have to at least what a lot of people do now is use the LastPass authenticator because it – it's easy. You don't have to enter a number. It sends a notification to your phone. I love this. Microsoft does that too, where you just say approve. That is awesome. But what it's also awesome for me as a business owner is it's secure. Because, frankly, when you're giving employees passwords to, you know, everything, your bank accounts, your servers, your website, your QuickBooks, everything, they've got the keys to the kingdom. And I saw a study that said 81% of employees share passwords, not just with other employees. This is not a good thing. That's why we use LastPass. I can actually give an employee access to the bank account without giving them the password, just that it auto logs in using LastPass. LastPass Enterprise makes password sharing safe but convenient for employees, keeps access to our corporate data secure. It is use can set master password requirements, which we do, of course, enable password resets. We do that as well. So if you forget your password, you have to go to Russell. Or I guess you could go to me, but I wouldn't, you know, I don't know how to do it. So you go to Russell, and Russell can reset you. But that's good. So we keep track of this. And I do get an email. And I just want to say to some of our employees, I notice you're forgetting your password a lot. Stop it. Actually, it's one of the great conveniences. We also, by the way, give all of our employees a personal version of LastPass as part of the benefit of employment, because I think it's so important that everybody who works here has LastPass, personal and enterprise. And when you do it that way, you can have one login. When you log in, it automatically unlocks both vaults. They're still separate vaults. I don't have access to their passwords there. But that way, they don't have to have, I got to switch over to my personal vault. It's all there. I really like that feature as well. LastPass has a password generator built in. That's really, I use it all the time. I just signing up for a DNA thing. And I had to log in. Of course, I use the password generator. And a little tip, I look and see, because they'll say you can have your password, I think on this one it was 64 characters. So I don't make it 64. I want to make it a little harder on a hacker. So I make it a different number, and a different, like 63 or 61. I always do that. And, you can say whether it's alphanumeric, whether you have special characters. They have a couple of settings I really like. Make it easy to read. So that it eliminates ones and L's, you know, so you don't have that confusion. Make it easy to say, which makes it kind of word-like, which is awesome. And this all encourages people to use the password generator, which is so important. It will warn you if you reuse passwords. It will help you change passwords. There's actually a security audit you can go through on your personal vault so that you can say, have I reused passwords? Do I have insecure passwords? And then it automatically will help you automatically change your passwords on those sites. Make yourself more secure. Of course, LastPass is completely secure itself. Data is encrypted. It's decrypted only at the device level. And by the way, every device. The other reason I use it, it works on Linux, it works on Windows, it works on Mac, it works on Android, it works on iOS, and I have it everywhere. It's the first app I install no matter what. When I get a new phone, and you know that happens, unfortunately, fairly frequently, first thing I do, put LastPass on there because it saves me so much time. Especially now with Android Pie and iOS 12, they've really improved the password autofill. iOS 12 makes it passable for LastPass to autofill almost all the time in every application as well as every website. It couldn't be easier to set up a new phone. Boom, boom, boom. Just log right in. I really like that. You used to have to copy and paste. You don't have to do that anymore. That is a big, big improvement. If you use Microsoft Active Directory, even better. You don't have to remember any passwords. Just use your Active Directory credentials, and that'll log into LastPass as well. There's LastPass Premium for personal use. There's LastPass Families. That's what I use at home. That way I can easily share folders with Lisa. All the household accounts we both control. That's a great solution. Plus, emergency access. I think that's really important. We all have... If you have a password vault, you know, your personal stuff, what happens if you pass away or you become incapacitated? With emergency access, you can designate people who can request access to your vault. So if you do die, they can, you know, your executor can get in and handle all the banking and the bills and close everything down. Don't close down my Facebook, though. I'd like it to be memorialized. I want lots of comments. Leo, what a jerk. That kind of thing. Imagine a world without Leo. Oh, you don't have to. That kind of thing.
Just go to Facebook.
More than 13 million people trust LastPass. It is the number one most preferred password manager. It's the one I use. Steve Gibson vetted it. He talked to the creator, looked at the source code, said A+. He uses it. You ought to be using it. LastPass.com/twit. Check out the product that's right for you. I'm sorry, I go on and on about LastPass, but because I just really believe in it. Everybody ought to be using this. LastPass.com/twit. Paul and Mary Jo, on we go with a new patent push happening in Redmond. That sounds like a Mary Jo story.
It is, yeah. But you're going to be interested in this because it's also an open source story.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
Today, this very day, Microsoft announced an agreement with Open Innovation Network.
Oh, OIN. I saw this. This is huge.
So OIN is an open source patent cross-licensing organization. So anyone who's a member of OIN automatically gets granted royalty-free access to the patents of the other OIN members. So now that Microsoft is part of OIN, they've taken 60,000 of their patents and added it to the available database of patents for OIN members.
That is, why would they do that? That's great.
I know. Part of the reason they're doing this is because they're really on this kick right now, as we all know, to show they're good open source citizens, right? So it's going to take a lot to overcome Microsoft's history with open source, but this is something you can say, hey, remember when we used to try to hold Android vendors' feet to the fire and make them pay huge patent licensing fees in order to continue to distribute Android because we said Android infringed on our patents? This is saying we're going to stop doing that, basically.
I refer to that as the good old days.
Yeah, yep. I mean, Bill Gates is spinning in his grave.
He's
not yet spinning. Well,
I'm sure he sleeps in a mausoleum or something.
I think it's a hyperbaric chamber, but okay.
Yeah.
A couple things to note about this. It's been a bit misreported. A headline I've seen, unfortunately, on ZDNet said, Microsoft releases its entire patent portfolio to open source.
Awesome.
I did see that, and I thought, that can't be right.
Not right.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Are you sure that wasn't Forbes?
I woke up this morning and saw that headline, and I was
like, Microsoft has a nasty surprise for patent holders.
Wait, what?
Wait, what? But remember, Microsoft said, we have patents on Linux.
Right.
And went after SCO and a bunch of people saying, or it was the other way around. SCO went after them, but and said, you have to license Linux if you're going to use Linux through us.
Yep.
And if there's one thing that Microsoft did that really made them the enemy of open source, it was that.
Agreed.
The cancer comment.
Yeah. Well, that didn't help.
More like Linux is a cancer and Microsoft is a Virgo.
Actually, I think this is huge. This is really
good. It is huge.
Good.
But I want people to understand.
It's not their entire portfolio. That would be crazy talk.
No, because some people are like, oh my God, they're opening Windows to open source. No, they're not. You know, didn't do that.
No.
But, you know, what I haven't seen is a list of which patents. Basically, it's patents that would be of interest to people who are in the open source business. So I'm thinking like XFAT and those kind of patents that people may, you know, have been paying a lot of money to Microsoft for to license for Android and Linux. I'm withholding judgment till I can see the whole or at least a partial list of what is covered. But what's not covered is Windows. So Microsoft has 90,000 patents. This is 60,000 of those patents. So those 30,000 patents that aren't in there are probably like anything that's Microsoft code, like Microsoft source code, Windows. I don't know what else would be included in there. But still, it is a big deal. The one thing that to me kind of threw a little, I don't know if I'd say cold water. I've said it twice. Maybe I'll say it again. Cold water on this is the way Microsoft wrote about this on their blog. Here's their headline. Microsoft joins Open Invention Network to help protect Linux and open source.
Oh, please.
I'm like, guys, no. Look, you're undoing all the good rules.
Still own it. Don't think we don't own it.
Exactly.
We're just going to protect it.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But,
I love our industry.
You had something good going.
You were so close.
You did not.
It's still ours.
It's still ours. But we're just helping protect you.
Yeah.
For ourselves.
Yes. Well, it's a charity now, Microsoft.
It's a step forward, I guess.
It is a step forward. Yeah. It totally is a step forward. Yeah. And it's a good announcement. And I say, if you're dubious about Microsoft and open source, and some of the comments on the posts about this have been hilarious about how, like, there's always going to be this distrust of Microsoft and the open source community, and I understand why. But some people are like, you know why they're doing this, right? They want you to embed their products in your Linux, please. And then they're going to go sue you again.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
That's how much the open source community hates Microsoft. They do not trust them.
No, they don't. And you know what? With the history, I don't blame them. I have to say.
Come on. How could you have to be really dialed out of things to not understand that this is a completely different company now?
Well,
yeah.
No one ever said that open source people didn't hold grudges.
We're dialed in.
It's just a certain something still, in that
they're
community.
They're still debating Emacs versus...
Yeah. Anybody's worried about Emacs versus Vim. They're probably not right on top of the latest tech news.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, Emacs, easily, no problem.
I was waiting for somebody to say, you know, Linus isn't around right now, so this is why they're doing this, right?
Linus is here. Linus is here.
We noticed there's a vacuum at the top.
He hasn't disappeared completely.
No, but you know, you could see people they get crazy over this stuff. Oh, yeah. So,
yeah.
Sure. And then just before they announced this today, earlier. In this, I think either this week or last week, they announced a similar kind of agreement where they joined something called the LOT Network, which is a nonprofit community working to fight patent trolls. And they dumped a bunch of patents in there too and said, hey, everybody who joins the LOT Network, you get our patents. So they're out sowing some nice patent seeds.
LOT and OIN.
LOT and OIN.
Two things they have joined this week. Jeez.
There's a lot of oin like out there.
Like a lottery program from Hong Kong or something.
Well, that's good news. I'm happy to.
It is good news. It is.
I did think when I read the headline, what? So I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah.
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 What does this have to do with the Open Data Initiative?
ODI?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Good. Just checking.
No.
Yep. No. Or EIEIO.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, guys, can I backtrack it for a second?
Yeah.
I forgot to talk about one other story we had under cloud that also is pretty interesting.
Yes.
This is a story from The Information, which breaks a lot of interesting news. And they had a story this week saying, Microsoft is hiring a bunch of former Qualcomm people to work on quantum computing.
What?
Which I was like, wait, what?
Right.
So I went and tried to resource their story, and they are correct. They are hiring a bunch of former Qualcomm engineers, some who worked on ARM in the data center, some who are working on ARM, the ARM CPU, and they're putting them on their quantum computer.
Sorry. Good Lord.
Shocking.
Paul has fallen over.
He just
I won't
right
take this anymore.
So I don't think it's because they're going to put ARM processors in quantum computers. I think it's just that they're looking for people who know how to do processor design for custom CPUs that you would want in a quantum computer. And they're hiring up these people because they don't really have anything to do now that ARM's kind of backing out a bit from the ARM and the data center stuff. So I went and looked on LinkedIn and I found four former Qualcomm people, like pretty high, some pretty high level, who are all now working on quantum at Microsoft. So yeah, it's a thing, and they're doing it. And a bunch of them are based in Raleigh-Durham. The Information said Microsoft is opening an office for them in Raleigh-Durham because they're hiring so many of them there to work on quantum.
That's really odd.
Very odd. Very interesting. And also, it's been a while since we heard Microsoft talk about quantum. They were supposed to talk about it a lot at Ignite, and then that never really happened. They had some minor quantum announcements there. So maybe we'll hear more about what they're doing in quantum later this year. Who knows?
Very interesting. Hmm. And why Qualcomm, do you think?
Right.
I think just because they're shedding some engineers who were... You know how they were going to make this big push, supposedly, ARM in the data center?
Right.
And I don't think they're doing that now, or they're scaling it way back, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
So they need jobs. So, hey, yeah, want to work at Microsoft?
We want to hire the guys that failed.
No. They're good engineers.
No, I'm sure they're really good engineers. Like, some of them have worked. Like, one guy was at Intel 24 years and Qualcomm 14 years. I mean, these are people with a lot of chip experience.
That's what I want. The guy who got his degree 38 years ago.
Right. This is the Dave Cutler of processors.
Oh,
guys.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm being silly because I'm
still debating CISC versus RISC. Yeah.
I didn't get my degree 38 years ago, so I didn't get my degree at all, but it was 38 years ago. One more story before we get to the back of the book, and that is a big one, which is, but it's also a confusing one, a whole new bunch of processors from Intel.
Yeah.
Speculation and execution inside is the new slogan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, they've apparently issued a hardware fix for one variant of each vulnerability, apparently. But the big thing for me this year is that when Intel released the first 8th generation chips, they actually went with the U series chips for mainstream PCs as the first out the gate. And for the 9th generation, they've kind of gone back to the more traditional style of releasing these products, where they're aimed at gaming mostly. And so there are 9th generation core processors, actually also X series, which are the extreme processors, and then the Xeon series as well. So it's all high performance stuff. I don't know what that means for the rest of the 9th generation, if it's going to be CES or maybe more likely next year, this time next year, because they just released, I thought they just released updated 8th gen chips as well. But anyway, we're finally moving forward. You'll be excited to know there's still 14 nanometers. So if that was a concern for you, you might want to stick your head back on the ground. But they're working on it. They'll get small eventually.
Maybe.
The other thing is, this announcement came about a week after Intel issued a really curious statement about the state of the PC industry. They quoted Gartner instead of Gartner and IDC and other companies by saying that the PC market grew, I think it was by 1.9% in the second quarter. And this growth astonished them, and they weren't ready for it. And they're going to do everything they can to make enough chips, especially for these gaming type systems, which is the lucrative part of the market right now. I think that was their cute way of warning that they may not have enough of these by the end of the year. So if you're hoping on, you know, to get one, you should probably order one quickly. I think they're available now.
They're back ordered.
At least for pre-order. Yeah, they have already
back-ordered.
Yeah.
Apparently have some big chip buyers here in the studio with me. Mm-hmm. Did you see the 28-core Xeon workstation chip?
Yeah.
It uses 265 watts of power.
Yeah, so it's not going to be in a fanless tablet, but maybe when they move forward to 10 or whatever, we're looking at 10 nanometer,
know,
maybe.
In 15, 20 years, I bet you get something like that in your
iPhone. Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Apple will be talking about that in the iPhone 12.
Yeah. Inantech just came back with their benchmarks on the A12 processor in the new iPhone. They said it's basically is faster than a Core M processor in a desktop.
Right.
Not that you need it. There's nothing that uses it, but it's there. Future-proofing.
Yeah, this is kind of a off-topic thing, but there's a lot of talk these days about PC makers and possibly Apple using ARM chips in future products. You know, well, obviously we're doing it now in Windows, but those things actually making sense. If you sort of believe, and I think I do, that the Apple stuff is kind of ahead of the game, it would make sense that they are hitting those speeds now.
Oh yeah, it's all custom silicon. I mean, it's ARM-ish, but it's all custom silicon.
Yeah, but they got to be. I think there's something like two gens ahead of the rest of the industry.
Oh, you should read this Inantech article. The stuff they're doing.
Yeah,
it's totally unnecessary for a smartphone.
except it may be necessary, right? It's
future proofing. It's future proofing. It's like.
And, possibly, well, I mean, it's not just phones, right? I mean, this is important for a lot of things. So,
you gotta wonder. Although, I bet you that 28 core Xeon makes its way into the next Mac Pro, which they're apparently currently doing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. which is great because you could use it as a Mac Pro or as an Easy Bake Oven. And either way, the kids will love it.
No, it's like
it'd be fun if little cupcakes came out of the bottom.
They used to have those like tile-based heaters. You'd kind of heat. It was basically like a fireplace enclosed with tile. Yeah,
that's it.
And it would heat the whole apartment.
Put a quarter in.
Yeah. Like everyone's tan who's sitting in front of it, but only on that one side.
Infrared heating.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to, we're going to take a break. Unless you got anything else you want to say about any of these news subjects. Otherwise, we'll get to the back of the book.
Yeah, I think that's
next week you're going to be on the road, right?
Yep.
You'll be talking with an Irish lilt.
We will.
That's right. We will be in Ireland
Paul
next week.
Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley.
There's a 280 conversation thread thing going on right now between Alex and people from Ireland to make sure the show goes off.
I know about it. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good.
So expect problems.
Always include. No, it should be. It'll be fun. I can't wait. This is for an event called Micro Warehouse Cloud Camp. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that in a second, but I'm excited. That'll be fun. I bet you are too, Paul, having just come back from Paris.
I know.
Yeah. No, I like to go to Europe, come home from Europe, and then go to Europe.
Well,
if you do the math, it's a little expensive to do that. But yes, I thought about it.
Yeah. Get an Airbnb in Paris. I mean, they're not cheap, but they're a lot. I would think you could do that, right? I have friends who've done that. They're very happy. Hey, can I talk about my belt?
Your ceinture.
My ceinture. Not my seat belt. My slide belt. Simple, stylish. Subtle. People don't. Slide belts by Brig Taylor are high quality, comfortable belts with a little twist. Not a lot of us guys. Oh, look at this. This is my twit belt. A lot of us guys find that the way belts work these days with, you know, the holes cut in them just doesn't give you enough choice. You know, I'm expanding and contracting. And I need something that can expand and contract with me. Enter the slide belt. These are ratchet belts that essentially can fit you comfortably no matter where you are in the expansion-contraction cycle. They use a patented ratchet design. Very easy. The belt comes, as you can see, in a box with the buckle. And by the way, you can get that buckle engraved. These would be great presents for groomsmen and so forth. You cut the belt to the rough size you'd like it to be. They have a variety of different materials. This one's leather, but there's canvas. In fact, I'll show you the it's really, really pretty. The brass buckle, the antique brass buckle with the canvas belt. You look like a grown-up Cub Scout. It's awesome. But this so I've inserted this in the belt, right? And now this is the slide belt, the ratchet. You put it in, and it ratchets closed. Actually, let me open it up before I put it in. So you open it, you put it in, and then when you have a big dinner, beginning of the day, you slide it closed, nice and tight. You have a big dinner, you just a little bit more space. I love these. I wear them all the time. It's the most comfortable belt I have ever had. And what a great gift for the holidays. Let me show you one more slide belt. I showed you the leather and the canvas. This is the survival belt, which I really like. This slide belt is impossible to remove from the box. There it is. Actually, there's good reason for that because this thing has a fairly sharp blade in it. It's got a bottle opener. Let me get the blade out so I can show you. I guess you have to lift for safety reasons. You have to lift. Look at that. That's like from Russia with Love that, you know, you could. it's got a bottle opener. It's got a fire starter. You never know when you're going to need to start a fire. I'm not. Should I show you? I don't think I'll start a fire in here if I do that. And then it also, this is a flashlight. So your belt is really a utility belt. Wow, I just blinded myself. That was kind of bright. This is the slide belt. What a great gift for the adventurer in your family. They have unisex survival belts, colorful belts for kids, skinny belts for women. Yeah, they have belts for women, of course. And a one-year warranty, free exchanges, no hassle returns. So when you gift the slide belt, don't worry. Your recipient will never, never have to be stuck with your bad taste. They can pick one they like themselves. And there's such a wide selection from full grain and top grain leathers to high quality canvas, animal friendly, vegan. You can wear them casually around the house or out for date night. They've got all sides. I have several slide belts. I like them so much. So before you check out, when you go to slide belts, do check out the... Oh, I forgot to put away my fire starter flashlight. There we go. Check it out. The deals tab has great offers. But because some of the sets are already discounted, the offer code that I'm going to give you in a second doesn't apply to those. If you're ready for a better belt, and we know many of you are, this has actually been a huge success on the show. People love their slide belts. Go to slidebelts, that's plural, slidebelts.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout and receive 20% off. Look at that. No one can get the Twit engraved belt, though. That's for me. No one else may have that. Oh, okay. If you insist, you can have that, too. Slidebelts.com/twit. The offer code TWIT, 20% off your order. Slidebelts.com/twit. I want this to become the new sound that you hear at meals everywhere.
Well, I think the sound is going to be the reverse of that.
Oh, yeah, that's the tightening one. Slide belts.
It's like a deflating balloon sound.
It's like that click you used to hear with Surface when they unstuck the cover.
It is. It's like the Surface click. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, every morning.
Right. That was the thing. Remember they used to, in the video, they like the...
They made a whole video about it with schoolgirls clicking them shut and open.
I remember that.
Right.
Dancing around, twirling them on their fingers.
Yep.
That was such a great idea.
Slidebelts.com/twit. Now, it is time for the back of the book, and we're going to start with the tip of the week for Mr. P.T. Paul Thurrott.
I apologize to the person who told me about this on Twitter. I don't have their name in front of me, and like I said, 3 hours of sleep. But unknown to me, several years ago, Audible came out with a series called History in an Hour, and they sell these things for a couple bucks each. And they explain the history of World War One or World War Two or the Civil War or whatever. There's probably 20-ish of them. They're all read by the same guy. They're excellent. Before my trip to Europe, I downloaded and bought maybe 8 or 9 of these things. They're on sale right now, by the way, for about $1.50 each. And actually, since I got home, I bought the rest. I actually own the entire series now. So spent another $20 or whatever it was. They're excellent. And so... We don't really do an Audible pick per se, but if you're into audiobooks, one of the things I've sort of discovered about myself is that I get distracted when I walk. I start thinking about other things and I lose track of where I'm at. So I sort of like shorter things when possible.
I walk into trees.
I bet you that they're getting really tired of the Amber Alerts for the middle-aged guy who seems to have disappeared during his walk.
These things are very good, but they're also just an interesting way to learn about history in a way that isn't a 28-hour thing about one battle in World War II. It's just a
Trying the Audible originals now that they're doing? You get 2 a month. I love these.
Yeah. Those are good too, actually.
This is Audible. Now we should mention Audible is a sponsor, but I love the Audible originals. They just started doing. Do you get 2 or do you get 1? Because I get 2 because I have a 2.
I get 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have a choice. It's like...
There's 6 of them
every
month, 6 new ones.
But I actually haven't looked at October yet. I need to do that.
All right, but this is not an Audible ad, so I shouldn't go on and on about it. But it's really cool.
I mean, if we legitimately like this stuff, I'm not getting anything from Audible for saying this.
There's a Hi Bob, which I'm listening to now, is Bob Newhart's podcast where he's interviewing all these comedians, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then I got one that is hysterical. It's a little profane called Girls and Boys by Dennis Kelly. Carrie Mulligan does it. I could play a little bit of her voice, but I don't know. She might swear. She's very, it's very profane. People need to be burned. But it's hysterical.
That's even worse if it's just their heads burning, isn't it? But it's his game now.
I don't think that's available anymore. They seem to take them off.
That's the other thing. So you have to be sure to do this every month because the audiobooks are still there, but you would have to pay for them.
Ah, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and these tend to be short. You mentioned short. Yeah, this one's an hour.
Yep.
So what was the name of that
way to kind of get into this
of the history ones?
So it's called History in an Hour.
Okay.
They have actually. Let me just look at my thing.
But you have to pay like it's a regular book.
Yeah, but you could use a credit, but don't, because these things cost $1.50
each. Oh, okay,
each.
Right. So pay for
it. So I got like Nazi Germany, World War II, Stalin, the American Civil War, the Cold War, Hitler, yeah. World War One. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Good. Thank you, Paul.
And actually, they're not an hour. Most of them are actually more than an hour. I would say the ones I've listened to so far are typically about 90 minutes long, but it's such a great overview.
Lisa and I are such history buffs, and one of the things we kind of want on our trips is to something exactly like that before we get somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't want 44 hours of
whatever.
You can
never get through it.
You want, you just want I wish there was more of it, honestly. I literally grabbed every one that they have now. Nice. So this will be my next week or so or whatever, but it's good.
And do you have an app?
Yeah, sort of. So this is sort of an app pick. We know that Sticky Notes is coming to mobile, right? When I was in Berlin over the summer, I met with that team. I saw them working on it, literally on a computer with a virtual iPhone 10. You can see the notch, and there was the app, and I kind of pointed at it and asked about it, and we talked about it, and it's coming. But Microsoft is also, and it's very specifically, this team is doing something interesting where they're putting their stuff kind of everywhere. So this is the same team that's doing To-Do. To-Do is the kind of becoming the back-end tasks engine for Microsoft across all of their products. And they're putting sticky notes everywhere that it makes sense to have notes. And so one of the places they're putting sticky notes is inside OneNote, right? Which kind of dispenses with the question, you know, which one of these things should I use? And so at some point, I guess it's now, I guess it's not officially there, but it is there. If you create sticky notes on your Windows 10 computer, those notes are going to pop up in your OneNote mobile app on your iPhone or Android headset. So Laura Butler, the goddess of engineers, the person who's in charge of this part of the company, has acknowledged that this thing is there. They're going to officially announce it sometime soon. But yes, if you create sticky notes today, they will become – I haven't even looked this up. I should look to see if I even see the – well, I don't really create sticky notes on my computer, I guess. But I assume what they have is a sticky notes, you know, page or notebook or whatever, where these things just sync across. Nice. And so if you choose to use sticky notes in your computer, which some people will want to do, they're not stranded on the computer, even though you don't have a separate sticky notes app on mobile yet, although you will if you want it eventually.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I'm going to try it right now. But while I'm doing that, let's talk to Mary Jo Foley for her enterprise pick of the week.
Yes, this is a pick from Ignite that I don't think we ever talked about this on the show. At Ignite, Microsoft announced something called Microsoft Learn. And what Learn is a bunch of self-paced training courses that Microsoft is building out that are free. So you can go and check out these courses. It really is free. Like, there's no catch or anything. So things like Introduction to Containers on Azure, Create an App in Power Apps. And there's modules for these things. Like, some of them have 3 modules or 4 modules. They have tutorials and interactive coding built into them. They're pretty nice, actually. The way to find this, if you want to check these out, is docs.microsoft.com/en-us/learn, or you can just search for Microsoft Learn. So this isn't meant to replace real training or real certification courses. You know, if you need it like an MCSE certification, you still have to go through that kind of a program and pay for that. Or things like Pluralsight training. You know, there is still more in-depth training that you can get, but you have to pay for it. This is just more meant as kind of a way for people to dip their toe in the water on some of these things like Power BI and Dynamics and get kind of a first impression of how it would be to learn about these products and then decide if you want to pursue things further. So it looks pretty good. There's like 80 modules so far up, I think, and they're adding more every day. Microsoft Learn.
And now it's buzzword time. Not code word, but buzzword.
How dare you?
Actually, this would be a good feature, I think.
I know. Maybe I should throw these in from time to time.
Yeah, because I hate these. Whoops, yeah. That's not it. Sorry. This is the buzzword.
The buzzword is partner. Ugh. So, you know, in the past, when Microsoft said the word partner, it meant like reseller partner or an OEM partner or an ISV partner, you knew, you kind of had your handle on, okay, this is what they mean. Lately, when you hear Microsoft announce a partnership or we are now partnering with, it's actually a customer win. They had a couple of these recently, and it's very confusing because when you read the announcement, you're like, oh, wow, you know, Microsoft partnering with Volkswagen. I guess they're getting into self-driving cars or with Grab. I guess they're getting into ride hailing. Mm. Then you read deeper into it, and it's like, oh, this is just the way they talk about customer wins now.
They're buying Microsoft Office.
They're buying Azure, right? Yeah. They're buying other Microsoft products, and Microsoft sometimes invests in them. And we don't really know what form those investments take or how much they are. But this is the new lingo around Microsoft. Ever since they started talking about digital transformation in a big way, they started talking about customers as partners. So, you know, it's just a word to the wise. If you think Microsoft's doing something in a certain space, it might just be that they sold some products to a customer in a certain space, and they're now a, quote, partner.
Could the next buzzword of the week be invest?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Invest, I'd like to know what that means.
I know. Well, you know, because that one with Grab that Microsoft announced this week, they're like, yeah, we're investing in Grab, which is, I guess, a ride-hailing company. So I forget who said this to me on Twitter, but somebody said, you know, investing can mean they gave them a bunch of Azure credits and they're investing in them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In other words, they might not have pumped them full of money. They might have.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's like I'm invested in my kids. It doesn't mean I'm writing them a check.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have a concern.
The reason Microsoft justifies calling these people partners now is they say, well, you know, we're sending some of our engineers to work with them on site, and their engineers are coming to work with us on site. Well, they've done that in the past before, too. That's not something brand new, but they never called them partners before now. That's all.
Yeah. I think we're all partners now.
We're all partners here.
Yep.
All partners. Mary Jo, on this bus. I'm invested in you.
Thank you, Paul. You can buy me a Guinness next week.
Yep, part of my stock portfolio. Yeah. Ah, speaking of beer, it's time for some instant gratification.
So, you know, I pick a lot of New York breweries because I feel like people come here and they're always like, hey, what's the local awesome beer that I can try? So I've picked a lot of different ones, but I don't think I've ever picked Three's Brewing before. And Three's Brewing is a really great brewery in Brooklyn. The reason I thought about picking them today is they have so many cool beer names. And some of them would have applied to our rant about Windows 10 today. For example, constant disappointment. Chronic myopia. I hate myself.
Oh,
no,
God.
Panacea. These are all their beer names.
Why would you drink a beer called I Hate Myself?
It's a joke on IPAs, believe it or not. I don't want to humor Paul, but like, I think they get kind of sick of people always saying, I want an IPA. It's like, why do you want an IPA? Do you hate yourself?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Paul would agree.
He would. But the beer I picked from them.
I said those exact words.
I think you did say those words. The beer I picked from them is called Instant Gratification. And this beer is labeled as a sour IPA, or some people call it a sour farmhouse. But it's definitely a nice, mellow sour. It tastes like, I think it's made with prickly pear and lychees. And it has like a little light grapefruit flavor, very refreshing, very delicious. So if you're looking, if you're in New York, oh, it's so good. It's like juice. It's like juice, but it's a beer. It's a delight. So yeah, if you're looking for a local beer to try, anything from Three's, especially Instant Gratification.
All the pictures on Untappd are of the beer can, except for this one guy.
He's like, yeah. Like, he's like, look at me drinking it.
It's selfie time.
I have to add my picture to Untappd of me drinking it.
I think, you know what? I could see the can. Put more pictures of you drinking from the can.
The can's kind of cool looking.
It's
a pink can.
It's an interesting can. Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah. Instant gratification. Don't you want some? Yes, you do. Next week, we come to you from Dublin.
Yes. Yep.
That'll be there's some beer there.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. Good tea, too.
Good whiskey as well.
And good whiskey. So it's the Micro Warehouse Cloud Camp. What does that even mean?
So this is a day-long event for people who care about Azure, but also about hybrid and Windows Server. And all of those topics are going to be covered at this
nice
one day.
Of Paul to go along with you for the ride in that case.
Somebody has to carry the bags.
Oh, sounds like fun. Yeah. So you guys are going to do the show at your normal time from there.
We are.
Good.
Right. We're going to be doing the keynote from the event, and then we're going to do Windows Weekly, and then I think we're doing a meetup right after Windows Weekly. It's going to be a full day. Yeah.
Great fun.
Yes.
Nothing for anybody to do unless you're in Dublin, and then you can find out about the meetup. How?
Yeah, how we'll do we tweet find about out about it?
Okay, follow Mary Jo Foley.
We will tweet about it.
At Mary Jo Foley on the Twitter.
Yes, please. Make sure it's at Mary Jo Foley.
At her. At her. And then, or at Therat. And both are both are good to follow because you get, you know, great tidbits, information.
I don't know. Therat after that notch head thing. I don't know about that. Oh, well.
It's funny that that guy did that because I literally was planning to do the same thing myself, like find a photo of myself and then add the notch head guy's head. You know, the,
did you see
the
this,
notch.
Leo?
I have not. I'm going to go to Therat right now.
Yeah,
this was Paul during the Google event.
Yep, he said he was going to buy the Pixel XL despite the notch. And so then I sent him a picture of a guy with a notch haircut, and then DropTunes created an image of Paul with the little haircut.
Oh, and it's on his Twitter?
It's a good look.
Yeah, it's a good look.
I retweeted it.
I think you got to do that for Cloud Camp before we go.
You know,
I like it. It's.
I think for Halloween, we should all get notch head caps.
Yeah.
I like the Samsung. It's the Samsung ad, right? Yeah, with the he brings his family.
The family all has notches.
And the little kid has the notch.
Yeah.
I love that ad. But you might as well get used to it because everybody's got notches.
I know. I think notches are going to come and go.
You think that?
I hope.
But what?
Oh, they already are. Like the OnePlus 6T is going to have a little tiny notch.
But what do you do for the camera and all that stuff? I guess someday they may have cameras.
I think it'll be embedded in the screen.
That can come through the screen and still the screen's going to be there. I just like they'll someday maybe be a fingerprint reader through the screen. I don't, you know, I'm so used to it that I don't even see it anymore.
Apple, you know, I get the feeling they could have made that thing half the size for this release, but didn't because it's an S year.
Right.
And I bet next year they'll be celebrated for that
squeezing the notch.
Yeah, it'll be smaller.
The thing that irritates people about the Google Pixel notch is that there's also a chin at the bottom. So it's like,
you know. I think it's the thing that irritates me is it looks like Bugs Bunny's teeth. It's like the
Now I'm not going to be able to unsee that, am I?
No.
You know? You
might, Oh, Paul.
Sorry. It's humongous.
It is.
Is it that this is what Google one is really big?
Is this like a macular degeneration test or something? Like it's just this thing that's just hanging down, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, it doesn't bother me particularly, but.
I'll let you know, but.
If it bothers you.
Did you already order one?
Me? Oh, yeah, of course. I ordered one before the event was over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I want it, but I want to see it more.
So I know you use Android. Which Android do you use now?
I still have the Nexus 6P. I'm ready for an upgrade.
Yeah, I use a Pixel 2 XL.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you'll want this one. Everybody who's touched it says it's really nice, except for the notch.
I can't believe they made a notch like that.
I think you just have to right now with the way things are if you want to almost...
Unless you want the smaller one.
It looks like it's twice as big as the one on the OnePlus 6.
What about the small model doesn't have the notch, right?
That's true. But the small model it looks like the old Pixel 2 XL. So it's got the curved top and bottom, but it's a forehead and a chin.
Well, I am... I'll have mine by... let's see. I won't have it by next week. I'm getting it... a week from
mine's
tomorrow.
Coming late next week.
Yeah, late next week. Yeah. So
I might order the smaller one, kind of compare them.
There you go. You can always return it.
Right.
Yep. I'm a Google Fi customer, so I always want to keep the latest.
Now, me too.
Oh my! So by the way, I did something this past week I've never done before, which is I've used so much Project Fi, they're going to slow me down.
What?
You have to hit 15 gigabytes.
Oh, I didn't know they did that. Oh, that's annoying.
I didn't either.
That's because you were traveling.
Now you know.
I have a data sim, and so my wife left it in her purse, and my daughter and her used it the whole time we were away.
Oh, wow.
I used it in New York as well, just because that hotel Wi-Fi was terrible. So I'm like, screw it. I'm going away three times this month. I'll just, you know, it's going to be free up to 6 gigabytes.
That, and it is. I did kick that in Europe, and that was awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. But
hey,
if you hit 15,
the rest of it's on us. The rest of the day.
So here's here are your options at 15 gig. You can go down to 256.
Ew.
Or you can flip a switch and you'll just start paying per gigabyte again.
Oh, that's what I would do.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do.
It's $10 a gigabyte, which is not cheap, yeah.
but
it's not awful.
No data or slow data.
So I had three different choices when we were traveling. We had that Skyrim Solus. Mm-hmm. Which, unfortunately, I found out has a 500 megabyte a day limit. So that kind of alerted. Oh, wow. That was like, I'm not going to use that. And then I had T-Mobile.
How do you find that, by the way? Is that slow overseas?
It's not. It's like definitely 256? Slow. Well, I paid an extra $20 a month so that it would be 256. Because normally they say 128. And I found that usable.
You pay $20 a month extra every month?
Well, no, only for, I'm going to turn it off now. But for the months that you're going to be international, And then Fi, you already described the Fi payment. And I think Fi was, I wouldn't even need the Skyrim anymore because Fi and T-Mobile were more than fast enough. I mean, they're not
so
fast.
So you found that 256 was fine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it.
To tweet... I posted on my blog. I was able to get email, read and send email. I wasn't, I played Pokemon Go everywhere. It's fast enough for that. That's actually a data hog.
Interesting.
I told you in Malta, I got accosted by two teenagers who said, Zapdos, Zapdos, Zapdos. And I said, what?
You're stealing their Pokemons?
No, they wanted me to go raid. There was a raid down the road on a Zapdos. And we all went. We met a lot of Maltese people and fought together in Pokemon Go. It was wonderful.
That's amazing.
I thought they wanted my shoes. I was confused. Yeah.
They could have pickpocketed you while this was happening. But
I know.
Not
Zapatos,
Zapdos. Well, Lisa and I are both following these guys down the street and thinking,
sure, like this is going to turn into a hostile movie or something.
Yeah, but and then the other day, I'm walking down the street in Petaluma. Kid walks up to me, probably 14 or 15, says, "You playing Pokemon Go?" I said, "Yeah."
That's amazing.
I said, "There's a raid over here. Come on." And Lisa and it was fun.
That is amazing.
It's fun. Now he's my friend.
Sure he is.
Wait, you have like real life human friends now?
No. I have Pokemon friends. You can have up to 200.
Okay.
And his name is Cruelty. He's like this sweet little 15-year-old, right? Cruelty said, yeah, my dad picked that.
Is it Cruel-T? Because that would be amazing.
Yeah. It was spelled funny, yes. I don't want to say exactly how it's spelled. Zapdos, Zapdos. Here's my shoes. Don't kill me. No, Zapdos. They're supposed to speak English in Malta because it was a British colony. Mm. They don't. They're supposed to speak Italian in Malta because it's just off the coast of Sicily. Mm. They don't. They speak Maltese, which is the weirdest Arabic language.
Oh,
it's Arabic mixed with Italian.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
And it's not written in Arabic script. It's written in, they romanized it, except that they just couldn't accommodate it with 26 letters. So they have a lot of very strange, an H with two lines across. They have lots of extra letters.
Hmm.
It's a country unto itself, but I love it. Zapdos. Ladies and gentlemen, the end of the line has come our way, and that's not a bad thing. It just has to happen every once in a while. All good things must come to an end. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. You can get more of Thurrott all week long. Take a nap, Paul.
I'd like to crank up more than one article today if I could, but apparently I can't.
Take a nap. Mary Jo Foley, she's cranking them out. She's setting a standard for all of us at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And together they join us every Wednesday, around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you'd like to join us, you can too. You can watch that stream live at twit.tv/live, or you can come by. And Michael from Howell, Michigan, and Dan from Boston, and Andreu from Barcelona. Are you from Barcelona, right?
Not really.
Not really. Where are you from in Spain?
Deida is 100 kilometers.
Deida. She's just outside of it.
Yes.
But you're still
outside of Barcelona.
Of course.
Nice.
And Spanish. and Petaluman. If you want to do that, you just email tickets at twit.tv. Of course, you have to be in the Petaluma area. It'd be kind of hard to attend live if you weren't. But if you're going to be, let us know, and we'd love to see you. Otherwise, subscribe to the show. Get your downloads, audio or video, at twit.tv/WW. It's on youtube.com/, I think, Windows Weekly Show, something like that. Or, you know what, the best thing to do, go to twit.tv, the page, twit.tv/subscribe, and links to everything, including YouTube and everything, are all there. And that way you can get it every Wednesday, the minute it's available. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you, everybody, for coming by. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.